Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the Amplified podcast. Hopefully you're following along with us at Amplified Team Training on LinkedIn. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Amplified Team. And wanted to let you know as a listener, we are doing a workshop every 2 weeks to provide a free service to you as an individual to work on your leadership and teamwork skill set. You'll get an opportunity to explore what Amplified Team Training is all about. You can benefit from it individually and then explore if it's something that might be a good fit for you and your team, how we might be able to help with some teamwork, collaboration, whether it's more corporate strategy initiatives like new hire onboarding, going through a merger or acquisition of other teams, and an experience to understand how does our training work. We encourage you to check that out. It's every other Thursday at noon. This episode is actually with a colleague that I've had the pleasure of working with. His name is Steve Powell. He's a graduate of MIT with a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in electrical engineering and computer science. He's active in the startup ecosystem as a co-founder, angel investor, and advisor to both early stage and later stage public companies. He's a very well-rounded individual and executive leader. I had the pleasure of working with him at one of the technology startups that I got to work for, and I was just fascinated with how he worked, how he led, and we have stayed in touch, and I've been fortunate enough to learn from Steve, and he was gracious enough to share some time on this podcast and give us some time to interview him about his experience in working with large teams and small teams. What's really fascinating about this conversation is the way in which Steve engaged the team, how he worked to break down walls to get people more connected, working more human, breaking down those barriers of collaboration and teamwork. He took a very unique approach. He's been active with us, learning more about the improvisation as a tool for building teams and being a more constructive and more valuable leader of people. So we hope you enjoy this conversation with Steve.
And Steve, you have been an executive leader, an advisor, an investor, all in the technology, mainly in the technology space in the Seattle market, which is a booming tech metropolis. And so you've had the experience to advise and work with some of the largest tech companies in the world, and also some of the early stage startups of the world. Which one do you prefer the most? Did you ever have a preference of big versus small company?
You know, I really enjoy advising small early stage companies, and I would say that the only times that I've really been involved, both as an operating executive and as a consultant, have been when companies were successful. So for example, recently I was working with AT&T, but the reason that I was working with them was because of their acquisition of Alien Vault, which was an earlier stage company. And so, twice I've been executives of publicly traded companies, but those were because they were companies that I was with when they were very, very small, and they just continued to grow.
Yeah. So I'm just interested in what excites you most. Is it being part of that small, nimble group innovating and creating something new, or is it leading that transition into, you know, another company once obviously you've found success? So that's great. Do you have a preference?
Well, I think there's a life cycle there, which is that you certainly wouldn't want to be in that small innovation scale, not or the small innovation phase, not achieving scale at any point. You don't want to be doing that forever. But I think that there's definitely something special about having an entire company behind one mission. For example, I remember my first job out of MIT was with Oracle. And I remember when about 3 years into my journey at Oracle, I got the startup bug. And a lot of the reason was that I was feeling, I mean, it wasn't really true, but I think I was feeling while I was at Oracle that I was in the office automation group spending more time competing against, you know, the tools group or the Oracle card group than I was against, you know, Sybase or Informix, you know, or anybody else who was supposed to be our competition.
This is interesting because it's also gotten us down a path of mergers, acquisitions, which is the goal for a lot of companies, right? We talk about achieving an exit velocity, or what is it where it gets out of the atmosphere? Escape velocity. That's it. And so I think you're right on the whole life cycle thing. You're innovating, you're agile, you're working together as a team. And I think that's a fun, exciting time for a lot of early stage startups. But then you start growing, and then you need to grow. I've been with companies that add 20 people a month to their team in sales and marketing and engineering and customer support because you're starting to grow. What have you experienced? Like, what has been in the growth phase, those sort of challenges with people? Because we'll explore a lot of different use cases here, but now it's like new hire training, onboarding people in the startup world is not easy. In getting people acclimated to a company mission or direction quickly and making a big impact is not simple. How did you as an executive leader look at a work in a company that was growing and say, we need to keep the people working together. We need to continue to drive the culture and the growth, even with the new hires?
That's a really good question, because I'll speak from experience, but the other thing that I'll point out is that I believe it's much harder now. And the reason is that, you know, a lot of the ways to handle growth in the past was the recognition that, you know, as humans, we can only know about 150 people really well. And so what it really took was, sort of seeding folks who had been with the company, who understand the common vernacular, that understand all of the kind of the ins and outs and the culture of what's happening, and to entrust those people as partners to help new people come on board. And right. I think that's really important. And you'll find that that's sort of built into systems. You know, like, a lot of people actually think that it's about the people that you hire and it's about the organization structure that you have. But a layer above that are the systems. And a lot of people ask me, what do you mean by systems? And in product development, for example, Agile is a system. And Agile tells you that not only that you're going to worry about things in small chunks, but all the way down to, okay, there's going to be this thing called a daily stand-up, and everybody's going to say exactly three things, which is what they did yesterday, what they did, what they're going to do today, and what is blocking them. And managers are allowed to attend the daily stand-up, but managers are not allowed to talk. You know, there's a set of rules. There's a set of things that are built into the system. And similarly, across every function, not just in development, you have to have a set of systems. And if you can partner with folks who are already in the company to help spread what those systems are, you find that scaling is a lot easier. And I think that the challenge is right now in remote work is that we've had to change all our systems.
Right.
And it becomes just a lot harder to make things happen. I think about things that I've done in the past, like always bringing out the whole group to a new hire lunch, and always making as an icebreaker. I used to one of the things I used to do at Barracuda is I used to take everybody to this one cheesy Mexican restaurant. I won't call it cheesy. We actually liked it, but it was this Mexican restaurant, and we had this sombrero that we would always take. And on your first day, what you would have to do is you'd have to pick a song to sing wearing the sombrero. And that was just this notion that, look, everybody in the group had to do it, but it was like, hey, we're going to just start this, and we
Some
are
people
going
call
to
that hazing,
remove our barriers.
No, I love it. I love it. I think the thing I love about it is it shows a level of vulnerability and a level of trust to be able to do that and have everybody else support it and clap if you're able to do that in front of everybody, you're able to put out any idea that might cross your mind. And I think that's setting up the culture. In fact, we work a lot with companies with onboarding to help say, because a lot of the training that we do is that it's taking a little bit of, it's not singing a song in a sombrero, but you are making stuff up. You are thinking on your feet. You are interacting with each other. And there's always that level of you're trusting, you're building support, you're supporting. So you're creating that environment of this is how we work together. And I think we found, and maybe, you know, I think this might be an interesting transition as well, that in this last year, you know, that's easier to do when you can go to the actual restaurant and you can put on the sombrero and you can all be there together. And same with us, with the training that we do, we're so used to bringing everybody together in one room that now as people are still onboarding, sometimes they're doing that via Zoom, via, you know, other ways. And we've been working hard to figure out, all right, what are the best ways to keep that, you know, keep that that culture going or that onboarding going without things like Zoom fatigue or do, you know, we've had to consolidate quite a bit in some of the exercises that we do. I'd love to get your thoughts on how do you do that now?
That is really, really tough. And I think that the reason that it's really tough is that there are so many things competing. Like, I think that one of the things that I that I really enjoyed. I'll go back to another past experience when I was with Latitude Communications. It was a company that got bought by Cisco. It went IPO in 1999 and got bought by Cisco in 2004. But one of the things that that we used to do as a management team is we would pick the most remote places to go to for our senior manager offsites. And the reason we did that was there was no cell coverage. There's nowhere else to go. And so literally when you set out the agenda for the day, nobody else has any other distractions. You have nowhere else to go. There's no benefit to ending the meeting early because you're all moving together from the meeting room to maybe the little motel bar, you know, where you're still with each other. And right. So there's nothing to compete. And I think that right now, you know, the real challenge is that that you actually want to do things with creativity. And sometimes those things don't happen spontaneously in the 45 minutes that you scheduled for the Zoom call. They happen when they happen. And so I think it's been a real challenge. I would say that probably the biggest reason that we continue to hear about folks really looking to get vaccinated and looking to return to the office is not so much because they want to return to their cubes or their open office environment so they can crank out better Word documents or crank out, you know, better Excel spreadsheets, but rather it's that you can get a lot more of that sort of spontaneous ideation, you know, happening in an environment where you don't have as many distractions.
I couldn't agree more with you. And the more I've heard from peers and colleagues, it's the working from home is a benefit because, oh, I can do 7-8 meetings a day. And the reality is we can't contribute that much attention and quality to the conversation, the work, and not feel fatigued. And I love that, you know, you guys went to a remote place where you don't have any distractions. And there are certain little things of like setting 30 minutes after each meeting in your calendar to create some sort of reflection or follow-up or downtime, because whether it's ideation or just focus on quality of the engagement, we're losing that, I think. Admittedly, maybe a good segue. You're working with a company right now called Ample.
Yes.
Not related to Amplified Team Training, but still, it caught your attention to chat with us. Tell us a little bit about that, because I think this is a fascinating topic, especially where we are.
Yeah. So, you know, really, what we see at Ample is that remote work is, you know, really kind of the next filtering event. You know,
it's here to stay. Yeah.
It's a filtering event. So it's like, let's take e-commerce as a filtering event, which is companies who figured it out, won. Companies who didn't figure it out, lost. Right now, cloud scale data is one of those where people who are figuring it out are winning and people who are not figuring it out are losing. And mm-hmm. really, this notion of a remote work is going to be one of those, which is that the individuals, the teams, and the companies that actually figure out how to work in this modern future of work are going to win, and those who don't are going to lose. And so we really started Ample to say, hey, look, we are going to learn a whole new set of business habits. You know, what Peter Drucker taught us over decades is becoming obsolete. I personally was a student of the HP way and managing by walking around, and you don't do that anymore. And so how we actually build a new set of business habits for remote work is really what Ample is about. And we are actually taking a unique approach in doing that, which is that we're combining the best of what's being learned in social science along with the data that we're actually generating, whether it be through data from Zoom, data from Google, data from Microsoft, data from Slack, data mm-hmm. from the applications that we're running on our computers or our phones. And you take all of that data together, and that creates this interesting footprint that can be used to really filter down and narrow down the recommended advice and coaching, you know, that we need to keep our energy high.
And on top of that as well, I think the connection with other people, whether it's teammates and, you know, peer employees, customers, et cetera, that engagement is changing as well. Like you said, how you manage people, how you lead, and how you engage those folks are going to be different. I'll use a fun example. I'm going to pick on Chet because I can, because I won't get in trouble.
Sure.
So Chet calls me, it sucks the life out of me, and it kills all my energy for the day because I'm like, oh, he just put 5 things on my plate. And then my niece will call me and try to FaceTime me with her dad's phone. And I'm like, oh, that's so cute. And then I get energy. Totally unrelated to work. But I will say that's maybe a bad example, which we'll cut out. But maybe we'll use an example. Like, I talked to someone like you, Steve, or I talked to a mentor who inspires me, and I come off the call motivated, right? These are things that basically, like, these data points can highlight, right? Can help us understand about ourselves, how we engage in our day-to-day remote work. Is that
right?
A fair assessment.
There are so many characteristics about gains and drains. For example, it's known that very, very large meetings have different impacts based on your personality type as to whether they produce gains or drains.
Right. Yeah.
And one of the challenges really with very, very large meetings is that there are certain personality types that that don't feel comfortable to contribute. And so their voices aren't heard and they become a drain.
No, but you're right. It's kind of interesting, too, because, you know, when we structure a lot of our training, we do it so that, you know, sometimes people even narrow down even more into introverts and extroverts and all of that. And I think the way we structure our training is that you have to participate, but nobody can take it over. And so in that process, we kind of demonstrate that when you can create those environments where people are participating, even if it's a little outside of their comfort zone, but and nobody can just take it and run with it and go and steamroll, you can get more innovative results. And that's something we've been working on quite a bit, too, and how you translate that into some of the Zoom training that we do. And it's just it's compacting it into a smaller amount. It's funny you talk about larger meetings, so that can be an energy drain. You know, in the past, we might say, well, it's great if we can have at least 10 people in the room to do this or whatever, and we can handle up to 1,000 or whatever it is. And we've even found more in some of the clients we're working with, it's sometimes even smaller. We might not have done that live, but it's so much more impactful when we do it over Zoom, because everybody is locked in. They can't be one of just faceless with just their name up there and not video. They have to be involved. And so that it's changed a little bit, but it still is it still shows that same impact of having to engage when it's your turn.
You know, there's a lot of evidence that actually shows that the ability to talk about your mental health, you know, in the workplace is a very positive thing. And so the ability to tell people, hey, you know what, my battery's at 3 bars right now. You know, I could really use this. Or even the ability for the system on behalf of users to say things like, hey, you know, you're about to meet with Eric and Chet. You know, Eric is coming off of 3 back-to-back meetings and Chet is coming off 4. Hey, maybe what you want to do is take it a bit easy. You know,
I love that. We've done that a little bit, like with a group called Work Human, which does a lot of stuff around employee engagement. And then we've come in and like figured out how do you improve it? How do you make it better? And the same with like emotional intelligence. It sounds like this is almost like emotional intelligence for your online, you know, for your online meetings, about how to add that element of being aware of where you're coming from and where other people are coming from, and how to add that in rather than just run the meeting.
Steve, this was great. The insight, the inspiration, like the insight, most importantly, I think hitting on the energy in, energy out, Zoom fatigue in the working world we're in now is huge.
Yeah. And really this ability to learn these new business habits, you know, while we're utilizing, you know, remote work tools, I think is going to be, you know, really key. It's like what people are all missing is the ideation that we've learned how to do through face-to-face interactions. And as an increasing number of those interactions go remote, I actually think that the kind of training that you're doing will give people the skills and the habits to be able to better utilize the media. You know, we're all learning a new set of business habits. And, you know, I think that we're just approaching it from different ways. At Ample, we're taking it from the perspective of using data and social science to go do it. And I think that what you're doing is putting into practice you know, a lot of exercises that can help team dynamics. I think it's really cool.
Well, we appreciate that for sure. Steve, as an executive, right, most people become executives because of their skill in their respective field, whether it's marketing, whether it's sales, whether it's engineering, legal, right? At what point did you, as an executive leader, or an advisor, board member, et cetera, start to recognize the value of human capital and people and how, you know, the dynamic amongst people? Like, was there an aha moment for you in your career where you're like, I'm not just a brilliant products engineering marketing mind, which you are, and I'm fascinated at your well-roundedness as far as in knowledge, but the people aspect of it and the teamwork aspect of it, when did it hit you like, oh, this is something I need to focus on? Because I'm sure that's why you got involved in Ample, where you're like, this is an idea that I understand because I've seen it. When was that moment for you?
I think it's been a set of moments. And I think the reason for the set of moments is that my career was exactly as you described it, Eric, which is that as a great individual contributor, I was put in the position of leadership to, you know, along a function. And I think that, unfortunately, I think that I was one of those people along the way where Other people actually said, boy, this person has a lot of potential, but needs to get some management training. And so the reason that I am familiar with DISC and FIROB and Myers-Briggs and the entire spectrum of tools that are actually utilized is that I've been sent to school. In fact, others have actually called it POW camp, that people are like, oh, Steve's going back to POW camp again, which is that, okay, it's time for Steve to get some additional help on his leadership skills. And so I think that, you know, I've been a student of all of this, a practitioner of all of this, and even an evangelist as I've grown throughout my career.
You came to our workshop on your own, and I so appreciate that. What we're doing every 2 weeks as a free offering to the individual. Was there a moment that was valuable for you in that, or something that really stuck out in just going through 30 minutes of? Because we're not a Myers-Briggs, we do DISC, we certainly do our DISC certified, and we'll do DISC assessments for our clients. But a lot of our training is based on improvisation, which I'm sure is a new approach for you. Was there something that grabbed you in that workshop?
Yeah, I really appreciate the interactivity and really the tie back to the lessons. And probably the best analogy that I can think of is like doing a ropes course. You know, when you do something unfamiliar, like one of the things they have you do in like a ropes course is that you will walk across a log on the ground and everybody can do it. And then they put that same log, same length of log, 60 feet up in the air. And now all of a sudden it's scary. You have all of the ties to ensure that you're not really going to fall, but somehow it's scary because it's in a different context. And I think that really, when you come out of it, you come out with the physicality, you know, the experience of saying, okay, I've learned a lesson here, that it's the same kind of log, and the fact that it's 60 feet up in the air should not actually change what I'm doing. And I think that the same thing becomes true when we do this improv. I think one of my favorite examples that was done was the difference between adding a but, no but, versus saying yes and. And how the improv changes so significantly when you have to say yes to everything, because all of a sudden the ideas and the conversation goes where you didn't expect it to go at first. And I think that was a really, really valuable part of the workshop that you did, which is, hey, let's say no to everything and let's differentiate that by saying yes to everything.
Yeah. And we see that. I mean, and we do that because it's so prevalent in the business world where – Like you, I went up through leadership because of my ability to contribute as an individual, and then understanding people was a different skill set. Like, you had to learn that. People were like, oh, you should go into sales because you're good with people. And I said, okay, that's interesting. But what I needed to learn was, like, how do people better work together? And when you, my point is, when you develop a skill set as an individual, you immediately look at what people are doing wrong that you didn't do, and your mindset immediately goes into, no, that's not right. No, that can't be it. Or no, you're doing it wrong. Or yeah. Oh, and you try to be agreeable and you say yes, but I don't think I recognized, and a lot of leaders recognize, how often their mindset is shaped to say no. And then what can come, like, how do you say yes and how do you support your team, and how do you get your team supporting one another? It's just something that is not part of the management curriculum, I don't think. I haven't seen it. You can understand the individual, but how do you get the group going? And I think that, you know, that's a really positive feedback. That's inspiring feedback for us. So thank you. Chad, any other question that you had?
I'm just glad Steve didn't say, no, I didn't get anything out of it.
That would have been a big bust.
An interesting addition is feedback. You know, I think that one of the things that as I recall going to POW camp is the power of actually not saying anything. And there's a real power of that. And I don't know how that plays into improv training, but there is a real power to actually letting the group run for a while and not saying anything.
As a leader, for sure. Yes.
Yeah, and we do. I mean, that's kind of in the expanded, you know, the expanded edition of what we do. We do get into the power of silence, and that so often people are afraid of silence, and yet there can be such strength in silence, both in getting new ideas or even in negotiating to just stop and stop talking, you know, so you can, because it's hard to work off of someone else if you never listen and be quiet and listen to them, you know, if you're always waiting for them to shut up so you can say your next thing. So we do that, just know we haven't done it in that 20 to 30 minute piece, but I think that's interesting. We might explore that. So, yeah.
And being an executive, being a leader, you really enjoying the small company atmosphere. I was curious why that is. You know, what is it about the small company atmosphere, the people, the connection that's different from a big company?
Yeah, just everybody being behind a mission. I just love everybody being behind a mission. You know, there's a tremendous power to the unity.
Yeah, and that's rare in a larger company. Each department might have their own. They're so siloed, and from my experience, but the power of getting a 10-person, 20-person, 40-person company all behind the same mission and the same goal, still a challenge. Still very much a challenge. Some of the clients we work with are VC firms that are having us build, you know, come in and work with their teams because the human capital is the most valuable asset in these early stages. You know, getting those ideas going, getting behind that mission, getting the culture right to unlock a product, a value, a go-to-market strategy that drives that exit velocity. You know, it's people driven.
Yeah. Well, I think that there is also a real power when operating at scale. And the reason is that while the entire company, when you're cross-functional, might not have the same mission. You know, let's say you're in, I'll make it up, customer support, and what you want to do is you want to focus on your customer satisfaction ratings, and that's the most important thing to you. Yep. Whether your product is a leading product, whether your manufacturing quality is high, you know, whether your marketing campaigns are great, you know, there's a real power to having somebody say, you know, I wake up every day and I think about what my customer satisfaction score is, independent of all those other things. And when you're operating at scale, you have to actually have those divergent missions
right.
at every step of the way. You have to have your marketing person have their objectives, and you have to have your customer support person have that their own set of objectives. I just think that from where the from the perspective that I take in the roles that I've had, you know, where you know, you're doing product management or general management, that is cross-functional. And so you want everybody to be totally aligned. But mm-hmm. There are, as you operate at scale, you have to recognize that there is a power to segmenting off those different objectives. And, you know, somebody has to make the call. At the very top, you have to make the call and say, well, you know, I'm actually going to optimize for the customer satisfaction over the efficacy of the marketing campaign. Hey, marketing folks, it's not that your job is unimportant, but we don't live tomorrow if we don't have great customer satisfaction. So I'm just going to make that decision for you. It's not,
right.
You keep doing what you're doing. You keep pushing as hard as you can. I'm just going to, I just have to make some priorities. And you have to do that as a leader, and that's okay.
And it's hard to understand that people have an ego at every level, and their ego might get hurt by you making a decision. And in a way, they feel like their job might be marginalized because the decision isn't part of what they do.
Yeah, and that's the piece of that job that's actually not fun, because right. you actually want those people to to be as evangelical as they can possibly be, and you want them to put in all that energy. You want them to fight for the budget. You want them to fight for the headcount, and you have right. to be in the place to say, hey, you know what? We're actually not going to do that.
How do you? I hope you don't mind. I hope you have one more minute. How do you do that as a leader? That I think is one of the hardest things for executives, is being a decision maker and still you're making those decisions always at the expense of your people. How do you keep people motivated and still make a decision that may go against how they feel or how they think, or, you know, may not be fully supportive of their role given the decision?
You know, I think so much of this, you know, comes back to what you're doing at Amplified, which is bringing trust, you know, into the teams, which is that in the end of the day, what the person that's being said no to has to trust that you've actually taken everything into account, and that you're not making the decision because of some political reason or because of some artificial reason, but rather that for the good of the team, for good of everybody, you've taken in all the information and you're making the best possible decision that you can genuinely make given the information that you have in front of you. And that just requires trust.
It's interesting that you said, because there's been research done, and we talk about that in some of our training, about how if people feel they've been heard, if they've been listened to, and they trust the organization, they'll still support a decision, even if it's not exactly the way they go. But if they feel like they haven't been listened to, or that there is this trust or political stuff going on in the background, then they'll almost work to try to make sure it doesn't work well, you know? So it's very interesting that you kind of come from the same perspective.
I think that is a hard thing that leaders, it goes back to leaders, executives, the people training, right? They are very skilled in their own field, but maybe not have the understanding of the team and the people of building trust, building an environment where people feel psychologically safe to get up and play. That you don't make, you just make them wear a sombrero. You don't make them play the, I don't know the Mexican guitar name, but you get that. Creating that sort of environment is very difficult, where you're going to make a decision and it may not always go with them, but you still want them to support the overall company mission and follow you and be motivated to be a part of your team or a team under your organization. I think that's really, really, really challenging. Steve, this is wonderful. Thank you for joining us so much.